Hell hath no fury like a mob riled up by demagogues. Phrases like mob psychology or herd mentality came into vogue in the 20th century. In reality, it's as old as civilization. It happened in the Roman Colosseum in the first century. In the 16th century, Spanish Inquisition. In the Salem witch hunts of the 1960s. In 1965, when police let loose their dogs on the marches in Selma. And in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017. This mentality describes how people are influenced by their peers to adopt certain behaviors on a largely emotional rather than rational basis. When we are affected by mob mentality, we make different decisions than we would individually. Like a gang of playground bullies, individuals can lose touch with their moral sense. So what are we to learn from the gospel story of the officious mob that dragged the accused adulteress into the middle of a circle to call on Jesus to act as a judge? Perhaps the Pharisees designed the whole scheme as a clever trap to put both of them on trial and to weaken public support for Jesus. I mean, how else would they know where this clandestine adultery was taking place to catch her in the very act of adultery? I mean, they had to be slinking outside the windows and doors, listening to the intimacy develop inside that room where the adultery occurred. She was just a pawn in the scheme of her captors. And why didn't the mob bring the man who was caught in the act with her? Surrounded by a hostile public, a requisite number of witnesses accused her. Although the crowd had already reached their verdict, the leaders attempted to force Jesus into the dilemma of disregarding either the law or mercy. Jesus stole their thunder by interrogating the accusers. Which of them kept the law perfectly? The same law that said that an adulteress should be stoned demanded the same punishment for a rebellious child. Jesus aimed at getting the crowd to come to their senses instead of picking up rocks. The truth of the matter was that their vengeance would harm them as much as the woman in question. The crowd was sustaining a social world in which forgiveness would be as rare as absolute innocence. They therefore condemned themselves to being defined forever by their worst thoughts, words, and deeds. Now, whether the accused woman was seeking affection or pleasure or desperately selling her body for the sake of survival, her behavior did not bring her satisfaction. She was involved in a fruitless quest. Like mansions built on sand, relationships that preclude commitment too often wound or maim the people involved as they fall apart. Deep down, she probably already knew that. All Jesus needed to offer her was mercy. Neither do I condemn you. It was as if he told her, go, create something new. In reality, the woman was easier to save than the crowd was. After Jesus suffocated the flame of their fury with the wet blanket of honesty, did they recognize the misery that had made them merciless? Did they learn that their readiness to condemn the sinner was rooted in their own insecurity? Genuine faith encourages people to ask for and rejoice in forgiveness rather than pretend or even attempt perfection. Perhaps the most effective thing Jesus accomplished with the crowd was to disperse them. And as they went away, one by one, Jesus and the woman faced each other without the reinforcement of the mob. As the old saying goes, those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. All of us have been members of the mob, with tightly clenched rocks in our hands, ready to hurl the stones of judgmental attitude, community exile, or just hurtful gossip. This gospel bids us to drop the rocks, since none of us can stand up to the question, who among you is without sin? So how would we feel if the entire world knew about our most secret sins of thought or deed? I mean, would any of us be able to stand if our most intimate failures were dragged out on display before the entire world? St. Augustine comments that at the end of this story, only two were left: misery and mercy. Humanity has developed a particular expertise at creating misery. As country singers put it, we look for love in all the wrong places. So how have you experienced giving and receiving mercy in your life of faith? Like the woman in the story, let us never forget how amazing and undeserved God's grace of forgiveness is. It is interesting to note that the first ones in the crowd to drop their rocks were the oldest. And then, in descending order of age, to the youngest. Perhaps the older we get, if we are paying attention to life at all, the more we know we have no business casting stones in the first place. And we who are elders in the faith, how are we modeling for our youth the non-judgmental attitude and forgiveness of Jesus? Jesus Christ is the only person in human history, except for his mother, Mary, who stood the test of being without sin. If he did not hurl stones, how dare we? That should loosen the grip on our stones. It opens our hearts to the possibility that we might be changed from the stoning mob into a community of second chances, restoring the fallen to their dignity and to their future for all our sakes. When Jesus told the woman to go and sin no more, where do you think she would be able to go? Where would she find a community that would welcome her and give her a second chance? I hope she could come here to the church. Don't you?